This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from the all-new 2008 Cadillac CTS. Be an original. Visit Cadillac.gm.ca.
It's Wednesday, November 21st. An Alberta man has designed a line of T-shirts that read, "I survived the Vancouver airport." Currently, the T-shirt conforms to RCMP policy requiring all ironic criticisms be made in English. This is The Current Podcast.
Hello, I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. You're listening to The Current. For UNAIDS, yesterday's report on the prevalence of HIV infections brought both good news and bad. The good news was that the United Nations AIDS Fighting Agency is reporting a significant drop in its estimate of the number of people living with HIV/AIDS worldwide, from 40 million people a year ago to 33 million this year. The bad news is that UNAIDS had to go on the defensive over the accuracy of its numbers in the past. Here is UNAIDS senior advisor Karen Staneski.
Some people have claimed that we have been overestimating the epidemic in the past, but we have been doing the best types of estimation that we can with the best information that we have at hand.
Well, the UN's defense has not pleased everyone, including many people outside the organization who say they have been telling the UN for years that its numbers are not accurate. The dispute has raised some uncomfortable questions about the politics of measuring a pandemic, questions Edward C. Green has spent a lot of time thinking about. He is a senior research scientist at the Harvard Center for Population and Development Studies. He was also a member of the U.S. Presidential Advisory Council for HIV/AIDS, an organization which has now wrapped up. Edward C. Green is in Boston. Good morning.
Good morning. The organization hasn't wrapped up. My tenure is finished, though.
Oh, I understand. Okay, well, I apologize for that mistake. How long have you suspected, though, that UN official numbers of people infected with HIV are not as they say they are?
Oh, I don't know when I first started to suspect, but when I was researching my book, Rethinking AIDS Prevention, that came out in 2003, So during maybe 2001-2, I began to look at the figures, and that's when we started to have some random sample population-based surveys. And when you do a random sample of the population, rather than relying on what UNAIDS, and in defense of UNAIDS, they weren't the only ones. It was pretty much it was the standard in global AIDS to only look at data from women in antenatal or prenatal clinics. So that means sexually active women. Some people even thought, and possibly UNAIDS, or some people at UNAIDS were among these, that we were getting underestimates. But I said in my book that we were getting overestimates, because when you do population-based surveys, you typically always find lower rates. And for the generalized epidemic of Africa, it was on the order of 20% or so lower.
Okay, so the problem is who they were actually looking at, surveying to get the numbers. Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's the basic problem as far as estimating prevalence.
So again, how has the UN been doing this in the past? They're looking at women who are pregnant.
As I say, it was the global standard, looking at sexually active women, women who came to prenatal clinics. So that excluded men, and for example, in sub-Saharan Africa, infection rates among men are lower than among women. So right there, you have a tendency to be overestimating if you're not picking up men at all. And also, contrary to widespread belief, in any one year, we measure prevalence of behavior in the ages between 15 and 49. And there's quite a bit of premarital, especially prevalence, in 1 year, not having intercourse. So it wasn't picking up people that were not sexually active.
So when you started looking at this, you were looking at a different kind of sampling from the beginning then, were you?
I'm not somebody who does surveys myself. I was looking at available evidence. The demographic and health surveys that are done by the U.S. government, funded by USAID, the Agency for International Development, a few years ago began taking blood samples from people that they were interviewing in their behavioral surveys. So, in other words, we started to do random sample sero surveys, and we were getting numbers that were quite a bit lower. Some of the more extreme examples are Rwanda, that turned out to be 3% national HIV prevalence, rather than, I think the UNAIDS was saying 13%. Some people were saying up to 30%, but it turned out to be 3%.
Fascinating. So, you know, when we look at the overall numbers from 40 million down to 33 million, we're still talking tens of millions of people.
Yes, it's still a terrible pandemic. It's just that it's sufficiently terrible that if you make people, if you lose credibility with the numbers you're giving, it doesn't help anyone. It's a bad enough global pandemic that we don't want to seem to be exaggerating the numbers.
Right, and I was reading that someone who is formerly with the WHO, James Chin, is actually saying that it could be closer to 25 million people. Again,
yes,
down calculated
James Chin.
Again.
Yeah, he's a an epidemiologist from the University of California at Berkeley, and he and I met, I guess it was in the Philippines. We're doing an evaluation of national AIDS programs, and the Philippines is a country that a lot of experts were saying, oh, there's going to be a terrible explosion of AIDS in the Philippines. UNAIDS seemed not to be factoring in major major factors that determine levels of HIV prevalence, such as male circumcision, particularly in heterosexually driven epidemics. I think you have probably heard that if men are circumcised, it greatly reduces chances of HIV transmission. So in countries where most men circumcise, and the Philippines is one of those, and Indonesia is another, both those countries, the estimates from UNAIDS and many or most other major organizations working in AIDS were saying that we're going to have terrible epidemics here. But in fact, they're well under 1%.
And as well, in India, the United Nations has cut its estimate of HIV cases by more than half. And this is quite significant. And so again, so what are we to make of this? Why is the UN making these changes now, and what does that say about its credibility?
Well, they're making the changes more really because they have to, because the standard of behavioral surveys, the demographic and health survey, considered the gold standard, are now doing sero surveys along with the behavioral questions, and they're consistently finding lower rates. And so they're making these changes because they have to.
You have written about this, as you point out. You wrote a book a couple of years ago, but you have also written about this problem as recently as last spring. You were writing, but not for American newspapers, and you actually have said you chose not to write this issue of the numbers in American papers. Why is that?
Oh, yeah, I think in that article that did come out in AIDS.org, so it was posted on the Internet, I was saying that if you talk about good news, rates are lower than people thought. Here's an example. UNAIDS is now saying that the average HIV prevalence in sub-Saharan Africa is 7.1%. Well, that means right there, 93% of Africans ages 15 to 49 are HIV negative. You know, if you said that to people, they'd think you're either crazy, or you're minimizing a serious epidemic, or you don't care, you're cold-hearted. People, you know, you'd think that it would be good news to find out that infection rates are lower than everyone thought.
Interesting. I mean, again, we're still talking big numbers. Even if we go with the lowest number of 25 million, we're still talking big numbers. What's the advantage of trying to make it more?
The experts were predicting that China, as well as India, were going to have, I think China, I think UNAIDS estimated 10 million before long, and a U.S. intelligence report estimated at least 20 million. It's on the order. The cases have actually found are on the order of, I think Karen can probably correct me, but 400,000. You know, considerably lower. I've speculated, and others have. In fact, I looked at my book last night because I know I wrote something about this. And here's what I said in my book in 2003: it sometimes suits the fundraising or political agendas of some players in international AIDS to minimize the evidence for falling HIV infection rates, to present worst-case scenarios, and perhaps even to exaggerate HIV prevalence rates. Why? We can speculate. It has to do with fundraising. You know, if you paint a picture of catastrophe, this is the worst thing, the worst health crisis to ever befall mankind, then you can focus resources. You can even get major organizations paying expensive paying for expensive drugs for treatment, that's not something that governments usually do. Usually, our health programs are strictly on prevention.
So do you see, with these new numbers coming out now, do you see a backlash on the horizon in terms of funding or?
No, I don't think so. I don't think there's going to be that much of a backlash as far as funding and programs. I mean, the U.S. government has just announced that PEPFAR, the president's emergency fund for AIDS relief, is going to double from $15 billion, which is already, I think, the largest single health project in the history of the world. It's going to double to $30
billion. Okay. Well, Edward Green, thanks for speaking with me today.
You're very welcome.
Edward C. Green is a senior research scientist at the Harvard Center for Population and Development Studies. He was a member of the U.S. Presidential Advisory Council for HIV/AIDS. And as he said, he wrote a book in 2003 called Rethinking AIDS Prevention. He spoke to us from Boston this morning. This is The Current on CBC Radio 1 and on Sirius Satellite Radio 137. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. Well, since this report came out yesterday, the United Nations has been under a lot of criticism from people outside the organization. Even people who spent years working inside the UN says it has a lot of explaining to do. Stephen Lewis is a former UN Special Envoy for HIV/AIDS in Africa. He is in Mexico City this morning, where he is helping organize next summer's International AIDS Conference. And he's with us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Anna Maria.
Were you surprised by yesterday's report and the change in the numbers?
I was surprised at how dramatic was the decline. I knew, as many people knew, that UNAIDS was going to have to adjust the numbers because they had clearly been using inflated numbers for some years.
And when you were the special envoy then, did you confront them on this?
We talked about it. It's difficult when they claim to have the absolute excellence in the statistical compilations and in the data collection. I think it became clearer and clearer in the last couple of years. I was interested to hear Green say that it went back into practically to the turn of the century. For me, it was 2005, 2006 when it began to become clear that numbers were inflated and that it was obvious that the surveys that were being taken were going to show a lower prevalence rate.
And so why has the UN been so reluctant to change the numbers?
No, you see, I live my life in uncertainty. I don't fully understand it, because people like James Chin and very, very eminent epidemiologists have for the last while been saying to UNAIDS, using prenatal clinic surveys is not accurate. It's urban-centered. You don't get the rural populations. You don't get all of the people in the country to give you a random sample. How can you be dealing only with women who obviously had unprotected sex? And that became a very strong argument, and I think it forced UNAIDS' hand. I think when they started doing the random surveys, they understood that they had overestimated, and they brought the figures down. It's just so irresponsible, I think, to throw such uncertainty when it wasn't necessary, when they could have corrected things earlier.
Well, what kind of result do you think this might have on the effort to raise money for AIDS research?
I worry about it. I think the numbers are still so appallingly high, Anna Maria, that the world, when it steps back and when people step back from the news stories, will say, okay, there was a really serious statistical adjustment which was made, but we're dealing with 33 million people, 22 million of them in Africa. God, we're having roughly 6,700 new infections daily and 5,700 deaths daily. It's still so overwhelming that I imagine we'll be able to summon the resources. But I worry a little. I worry about governments which haven't shown great intensity about providing money. I worry about the big NGOs who depend on public support. If I may say so, I'm concerned even about my own little foundation, that people won't be deterred, because on the ground the situation in Africa is still appalling.
And arguably, if the numbers are downgraded, again, not as you point out, they're still high, very high. But it would seem to me that people who were putting resources somewhere would know where better to put them.
If you've been able to hone down the numbers.
Yes, and I mean, one can feel more obviously positive about it. You have many millions of people you thought were infected or not infected, and reaching universal access, which is the cry of all the activists, getting everybody into treatment or prevention or care by 2010, if you're dealing with lower numbers, then supposedly that objective becomes possible. So there are, in the reductions, obviously some positive features. And that fact should, I hope, spur people to recognize that I was shocked by the numbers out of Africa around women. It's now up to 61% of the infections are amongst women. The rise amongst women is staggering, and the fact that over three quarters of the deaths in the world are now in Africa. And two-thirds of the infections in Africa. It's more and more concentrated in general terms in that continent, and I hope the reduction in numbers doesn't blur the reality for the predicament on that continent.
Well, I actually have a clip of someone who thinks that this doesn't need to be cause for concern in terms of fundraising. Jason Clemens is a policy analyst with the Fraser Institute. It publishes an annual report on charitable giving. Listen to what he has to say.
For those who give to international organizations that focus on AIDS research or assisting those who have the disease, I don't think this great announcement of improving numbers dissipates their commitment or their connection with this initiative. Secondly, I actually think these kind of good news announcements, if used properly, can actually increase donations, because what it means to donors is that their money, their donations, are being used in an effective way.
So that's Jason Clemens of the Fraser Institute. Stephen Lewis, what do you think?
Well, I've never agreed with the Fraser Institute before, so I don't know whether I should start today. But I hope he's right about the continued commitment. I think he probably is amongst Canadians. I don't know whether that will go beyond. By the way, very little of the reduction in the numbers is attributable, Anna Maria, to behavior change.
I was going to ask you about that, because there have been a lot of education campaigns around sexual behavior.
There have, and everybody is hoping that there will be some dramatic alterations. But, for instance, in the continent I know best, Africa, they can only point to the countries of Kenya and Zimbabwe as being significant in the possibility of behavior change and accounting for the reduction.
What about Uganda?
Well, Uganda's now going back up, you see. That's a worry. Uganda came down dramatically because of a variety of factors, and now it seems to be going back up, and that is indicated in the document, in the report. Most of the change is as a result of a statistical adjustment, and once we get past that, we can concentrate on behavior again.
I'm wondering about AIDS orphans, Stephen, specifically on the African continent.
Again, the numbers came down from around 13 million. The figures that are used in the report are 11.4 million. It's so overwhelming, Anna Maria. It's still, for the high prevalence countries, the report says there are eight countries in southern Africa with over 15% prevalence between the ages of 15 and 49. In those countries, you have a million orphans or more in every country. These kids are still struggling. That's why the numbers bothered me. It takes the focus away from the reality, and the reality is that this is still the worst scourge we've ever dealt with.
Well, that's the point, right? The reality is bad enough. You don't have to inflate numbers, or even mistakenly miscount. Exactly. But what's the lesson for those of us who are at the mercy of the statisticians? I think those of us in the media, too. I mean, we report this stuff.
Yes, and I repeat it. I'm not going to pretend otherwise. Anna Marie, I think the lesson is that one cannot take the United Nations as the absolute answer to this material and these reflections and these projections, that you've got to be critical even of the agencies on whom we rely.
Those are tough words from somebody who's spent so much time with the UN.
Well, the UN has a certain impunity in all of this, and you know, when one looks at the numbers of orphans and the numbers of kids who are infected and some mistakes in calculus, one has to realize that you've always got to be vigilant in dealing with major institutions.
Stephen Lewis, thanks for speaking with me today.
Right you are.
Stephen Lewis is the former UN Special Envoy for HIV/AIDS in Africa. He spoke to us from Mexico City. Well, that's all we have for this podcast. You can listen to The Current weekday mornings on CBC Radio 1 right after the 8:30 news, as well as on Sirius Satellite Radio 137. To find out more about our program, visit cbc.ca/thecurrent. If you have any thoughts on what you're hearing on The Current, share them with us. Send us your comments. You can email us at thecurrent, all one word, thecurrent@cbc.ca. Our mailing address is Post Office Box 500, Station A, Toronto, M5W1E6. Or call us collect 1-877-287-7366. To subscribe to other great CBC Radio podcasts, check out cbc.ca/podcasting. Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.